Welcome to Drinking Bros, presented by GhostBed.com. Welcome to Drinking Bros. If you're watching the show on YouTube on Drinking Bros Podcast, you'll know this is a dramatic moment where we're going to go to a wide here for Hamidi Jassim, who's back again, a.k.a. the Terrorist Whisper. You've seen the film on Amazon Prime at this point. If you haven't rented, if you haven't read his book, you got to get it. He is our man on the ground in the Middle East. And I'm going to be honest, at this point, if you're not trusting Hamidi, you're trusting no one. Last time you were on the show, you were telling us about our yep. favorite guy, our
Muqtada.
Dude.
Muqtada Sadr, yeah.
Who's trying to change the world over there.
Pretty much.
Yeah, as of yesterday, this was about 3 weeks later, close to 4 weeks, the AP, a.k.a. Reuters, was giving you guys the exclusive story on what was happening over in Iraq, which you had already obviously given us.
Yeah.
Did I hear this right that we got named to, like, as a terrorist group or the Drinking Bros did?
I think, no joke, we are officially spying on Iran.
Yeah, there we go.
I think the Ayatollah is going to go, like, Drinking Bros, even these guys, even these guys are after me.
Where did you get that info? Who told you that?
No, it's actually, because you saw that the Four weeks ago when I was here the last time. We talked about the secret meeting that Muqtada Sadr had in Iran about the next plan for the Middle East or Iraq specifically. And you saw I sent you the link. It came out on the news just 2 days ago.
Yeah.
About 48 hours ago, actually. Exactly. So we were like actually
You're beating these people by about 3 to 4 weeks in information.
And, you know, this is information that I don't find online or, you know, I'm a intel guy. You know, my whole career working for the U.S. intelligence was actually collecting street-level intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
Street-level intelligence, basically intelligence that you don't find anywhere in the server. These are word-to-mouth on the street. It means you have to have sources on the ground that can get you this information.
Right.
So the good thing that through my career as an intelligence asset that I kept in touch with all the sources that I had in Iraq. Perhaps I left Iraq. I came here. And all the sources are still in the same position in the same place to this day, 16 years later. So that's the beauty of it. So when I'm getting that, we call it, it's off the giant mouth. We're getting this information directly from the source. No media sources would probably make it within 2 to 3 weeks to get this kind of information.
Mm-hmm.
And we're really showing numbers. And this is something that the mainstream media does not have the capabilities to get hold of unless they pay lots of money and recruit an actual source within the enemy, which they don't have.
Yeah, and the crazy thing is I want to tell the audience this because every time you come, we have a brand new like 4,000 square foot studio here in Wilmington. You are usually hovered in the kitchen with pages and pages of notes pouring over them from your sources. Hold those up to camera real quick here.
There it is, right there.
If you are watching the video show and you're subscribed to Drinking Bros Podcast on YouTube, it is pages and pages of notes all in Arabic.
It's in some kind of squiggly language. I don't understand, man.
We were talking before the show about how funny it would be if Hamidi just started developing a redneck accent.
Down in North Carolina.
I'm down in North Carolina, man. Yeah. Hell yeah.
Do your redneck accent.
It's Arabic. I don't know how to read Arabic.
I don't want to read that mess. Hell no, man.
They
go in the wrong direction.
I'd rather go get some barbecue than run after some dairy terrors.
For Halloween, we're going to have you dress up in some cut-off jean shorts, a Bud Light tank top.
And you're going to have to paint me.
And a MAGA hat.
Like a blonde mullet wig.
Yeah.
The whole thing.
Hell yeah, man.
Hell yeah, brother. I don't fuck around with none of that, all right?
Trick-or-treaters are coming up and you're offering kids pork. Just ribs. Y'all want a rib?
Bacon.
These moose lambs don't want one, so. This is our Muslim test. You ain't no Muslim, is you?
Yeah. Have a rib.
Eat this rib or I'll punch you in your fucking face.
Don't feel bad, man. I ate lots of pork in Iraq when I was in Iraq in 2005, 2007.
Out of choice or was that
no,
the only
actually,
thing
I you know, when you go to the DFAC back
pork
then.
Pork rib, bro.
You know, you have all kind of buffets in the U.S. military DFAC. And
DFAC is short for dining facility.
You don't know. Okay. But, so I was eating ribs for like 3 months. And finally, one of the Indian guys, you know, behind the buffet that works in the kitchen. And he goes, I thought you were a Muslim, man. And I was like, I am. And he goes, so why you been digging into like the ribs for the last 3 months? And I was like, well, are they pork? And he's like, yes, they are. I said, well, they tasted great. Yeah. I
was like, dude. Can you imagine like all those, I mean, clearly all those rules came from a time when there were swine. So pigs have really similar bodies to ours, genetically speaking, which is why we test chemicals on them and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And you can grow like a human ear on them. So diseases that are common to human beings often get spread through pigs because one, they're close to us, and two, they're nasty creatures.
Sure.
Right. So that's why at some point 80,000 years ago, someone was like, oh, God said, don't eat pigs. Like, honestly, if you believe in God and you think that God is a like an ethical and moral being of some sort, do you really think he drew a line at the deli aisle? Like, that's the line in the sand?
Yeah.
Like, you can't be a Jew or a Muslim if you're fucking eating pork. That's the one, huh?
Yeah.
And if you're a Catholic and you eat beef on Fridays, that's it? You're just done?
Yeah, it's just like in our culture, you know, we have people who are like, hey, can you eat pork? No.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why?
What do you drink? Alcohol. And we're like, what's the difference? If God said no to alcohol, no to pork, but you're still not eating pork, but you're drinking a bunch of alcohol.
So yeah, yeah.
What's to do? You're fucking it up anyway. So, it's like, and it's still to our culture. You know, people would not eat pork, but they will drink gin and all kind of messed up stuff.
Yeah.
That's how it is,
I drank quite a bit of something last night. I don't remember what it was.
We went hard. Last night was my birthday. We went out last night and went real hard. Various types of pork and... crazy amounts of liquor.
I had a pork belly, yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
And last night was Fat Tuesday. So that's a big thing here for Mardi Gras. And we were unaware, and it was just like every bar we walked into. Mm-hmm. It was beads, and people were raging, doing shots and all that shit. And we were like, oh, fuck it. All right,
now you're going to see those people walking around like zombies with charcoal crosses on their fucking heads.
Yeah. Yeah. Everybody who got hammered last night is going to have an Ash Wednesday cross on their head today. So we are recording this on February 26th. This will be airing obviously Sunday night at 8:00.
Yeah.
Clearly, when you're here at this point, shit is not good over there. So
it's always shit is not
good. Well, this is some of this is good news. So everybody knows about Soleimani and his little fucking friend that got murked on the...
Al-Muhandis, yep.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. How do you say it? Juandis?
Abu Mahdi Al-Muhandis.
Mahandis, that's right.
Okay. Yeah, Al-Muhandis.
So, everybody knows about that guy. So, I'll let you fill in what happened.
We're actually sharing pictures of the meeting that we're sharing the pictures of today. Mm. Uh-huh. He's on it.
Oh, really?
He was on it. It was actually just days before he got airstriked.
No kidding.
Yeah. That meeting with the,
thunderstruck, some might say.
Yeah, he did.
I think they only found his dick, though.
Yeah, well, you were the one who actually showed us the real pictures.
Yes,
and it was there was a hand, and then maybe 28 feet worth of intestines and some other things. Like,
they found, like, I think Soleimani's penis on top of the engine or something.
Well, was that what it was?
I'm serious, yeah.
Holy shit.
And the Iraqis were making, like, shit memes of that thing. They were, like, making jokes like no one business. I was actually just looking for the jokes. I was looking for information.
That's it.
Yeah, I was looking for the jokes. They were, like, making jokes. And
Soleimani dick memes.
Yeah. They actually had made one that was really funny. They said, like, they brought the wife, Soleimani's wife.
Uh-huh. To identify the
body, and they showed her the dick, and she was like, oh, definitely that's not my husband. That's the driver.
Oh man, that's fucking hilarious! What do you got for us today, here, Hamidi?
Today, actually, it's a crazy day. This information was just really fresh off Iraq. This is, you know, the last time we talked about details into how Iran actually do money laundering through Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we got information which is really off the ground. It's not anywhere else. This is something off the giant mouth, as we say.
Wait, off what?
Off the giant mouth.
It's like
you're taking it off the giant mouth. Mm. And this is something that I've been actually digging into for a long time, trying to figure out who the personalities are.
Mm-hmm.
So Iran had a really tough time in the last a few months.
Right.
You saw a lot of rage, a lot of protests in Iraq, a lot of anti-Iranian agenda.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the most difficult jobs for the Iranian Revolutionary Guard was to control the media and to enhance the picture of the Iranian regime in the Middle East through the countries like Iraq, Syria, Yemen, other countries, Bahrain, all the Middle East where they had their control. And the Revolutionary Guard Iranian Revolutionary Guard have never had any difficulties with anything before. Mm-hmm. They wanted to kill somebody, they want to assassinate somebody, it gets done immediately. One of the hardest jobs they faced, one of the hardest things was actually how they can enhance the picture of the Iranian regime naturally in this generation. Because if they don't, they have a whole entire generation coming against them, protesting, hating on Iran. So what they did is they actually, in the recent couple days, they have put a bigger budget towards recruiting and actual media reporters in Iraq. So
you mean they're trying to turn Iraqi media people into assets, basically?
They already have that, but they actually now they're expanding that project twice. They're putting more money. They're putting $5 million more.
Wow.
Into it.
So can you describe what the Iraqi media is like?
So the Iraqi media after 2003, after Saddam had went down, before Saddam, we had about two channels that was controlled by the Iraqi government. After that, it became a public industry. Anybody can own it. It became a business. Mm-hmm. So we had channels that opened from all over the place. Anybody that had it became more of like independent industry kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, you can go open a channel and do your thing. The crazy part is we have 17 channels in Iraq, 17 of them were paid by Iran.
When you say paid by, how?
Completely paid, funded by Iran.
Kind of like how Al Jazeera is owned by
Al Jazeera is funded by Qatar. Exactly.
Qatar government, yeah.
So 17 Iraqi channels were funded by Iran. What they really do psychologically is when you have 17 channels putting the same exact information and you're seeing it in every single channel, you're going to believe it. But they figured recently this was not doing enough. So they decided.
Are these all news channels or is it like there's
news? Completely everything.
It's all news. So they're not like. Yeah. I wonder if they're making like television, like sitcoms or dramas that have embedded propaganda in it.
Oh, absolutely.
Like you would think so, right?
So it's a full channel.
I feel like. I know this sounds strange, man.
Yeah.
I feel like this is partly going on over here at a very, very smaller scale.
Yeah.
But for the government, what's going on?
You think it's the government and the U.S. doing it, though? I think it's more like just the woke crowd.
That's what I think as well. So I don't think it's the government, but since our media isn't controlled by the government,
yeah,
it's somebody at the top. So you look
exactly.
At today, like maybe around 30 minutes ago, there's an ABC correspondent, David Wright, who's always reports for ABC and in particular politics. He covers politics for this. He was caught by, there's a thing called Project Veritas that's run by a guy named James O'Keefe.
Yeah.
And he goes undercover, talks to these people, and then he gets their real opinions off air.
Yeah.
So he had this guy today on, and he said, look, man, what's the real story with ABC News? And the guy's like, man, truthfully, I'm a socialist. And this is what David Wright said. And he goes, truthfully, I'm a socialist, but we have to report on stories that are told to us. We can no longer turn in what we want and report the truth.
Yeah.
It is more leaning towards a narrative. And he goes, if I'm being honest, there is a lot of good things that Trump is doing well that they tell us we cannot report on them. And he just got suspended.
Right away.
A half hour ago for saying this. He is a journalist for ABC. He was just in a ball, like he was just clearly speaking
crazy.
His mind, not anywhere near the news outlet. Like he was having a genuine conversation. Yeah. He did not know he was being recorded, obviously. But the same thing happened to Van Jones over at CNN on the Russian hoax thing and whatever. And it's like, man, we're this close to that. It feels like over here. But when the government buys that out, the effect that has on the Iraqi youth or Iranian youth, that will go on for generations.
Yes, for the whole Middle East, actually, not just Iraq or Iran. I mean, we have the same exact case overseas, man, like years and years back. And the only difference between us and you guys is that they can kill the reporter, here they fire him.
Yeah.
That's the only difference between us and you guys.
Which is a big difference because, look, that will completely stop you from reporting a news story.
Yeah.
And if you look at Khashoggi, you know, they chop that guy up pretty brutally. For reporting against, who was it, the Saudi prince at the time?
Here's what Wright said. He says, I feel terrible about it. And by it, he means the bosses at ABC telling him what he can and can't report, essentially. So he says, I feel terrible about it. I feel that the truth suffers, that voters are poorly informed. and people have the opportunity to tune in to whatever they want to hear. So it's like there's no upside. Our bosses don't see an upside in doing the job we're supposed to do, which is to speak truth to power and hold people accountable.
Yes.
I mean,
that's sad.
What can the I wonder, aside from just
a suspension?
No, I wonder, aside from people just not listening to ABC and CNN and Fox anymore, what can be done about that at this point?
I don't know. So I looked at the ratings. the ABC News and David Muir, and that's how they measure it. Yeah. There's a 6:30 time slot that goes across ABC, CBS, the big three networks, yeah, essentially. Fox doesn't really do it. And that's how they measure like who has the biggest news, right? Because it goes out for free and everybody else. David Muir at ABC and ABC News in particular is number one. And they're number one by a lot. So if that's the number one news network, and here's a guy that is your political correspondent saying that, where are we as a society with that, you know, as far as news goes and the distrust for news?
Yeah.
Trump was the first one that I can recall.
Yeah.
Who was yelling out fake news, fake news, fake news.
Yeah.
Before that, I didn't really see it like that. But, you know, you go back in time and you start looking through it.
Yeah.
It was probably like that all along, but I didn't pay as much attention.
John Stewart did that bit back in the day about Crossfire. Remember that?
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Like, he completely tore them apart.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because he's like, why are you taking what's the worst thing about politics and making it an entire show?
Mm-hmm.
The worst thing being two people entrenched in their positions, not really debating, just yelling their points at each other, and then that's it. Like, there's nobody ever comes to any kind of conclusion there. Look, life is not always black and white. There are a lot of gray areas, and we all have different experiences in life and different situations that require flexibility in our legal system, right?
Exactly.
And then social policy and all this other bullshit. But there is a, mathematically speaking, there is a best economic system for us, right? That exists somewhere. And it's got to be, when I say best, I don't mean like the most profitable. I mean the economic system that provides for our country the best, provides whatever needs, money, healthcare, et cetera, right? I don't see any reason why we can't come to consensus on shit like that.
Yeah,
There's some things
that going to change.
There's some things that you should not introduce profit motive into. Education is one. Mm-hmm. Like these universities charging $40,000 a year for kids to go to school is fucking crazy to me. And when you look at the numbers behind that, like teacher pay, professor pay has gone up like I think 30% over the last 25 years, and administrative fees, like higher up salaries, shit like that,
mm-hmm,
have gone up about 2,000% at U.S. universities.
Yeah,
so it's not like the actual process of educating our kids has gotten harder or more costly. It's the same as every other thing that's going on in the United States right now. Like, I hate to lend credit to some of these dipshit socialists out there, but they kind of have a point about corporations and education. Like, this is fucked up.
Yeah.
When you introduce some, the profit motive is a good thing for capitalism, but there are some things that should not be in there. Healthcare is one of them. Like, yeah, I want doctors to get paid really well,
mm-hmm,
right? But I don't want drug companies to be fleecing the American public like this.
Yeah.
And how many times has it been proven that they are withholding cures because the treatment is more profitable than the cure? Like, that is, you should go to jail for that.
That's the cure I was taking for my brain tumor.
Yeah.
It was in Canada for 25 years, and it just got approved in the U.S. like a year ago. But it was in Canada for 25
really?
Years.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's fucking crazy, dude. So, I don't know if Medicare for All, the numbers don't add up. But one of the reasons the numbers don't add up is because there's nothing saying some company can't charge you $25 for a fucking aspirin on your insurance plan. You know what I mean? So it's like, what's the government's role there? I think the government should have a very limited role when it comes to business and shit like that. Like, keep the peace, make sure nobody's getting taken advantage of, sure.
Yeah.
But for the most part, keep out of it. I think this is one of those cases where the government needs to do something. The government needs to pass, like, if Trump should just, and he's been fighting it in court. So he recently had a case that was, really anti-drug company that was going through the court systems and stuff like that. But I feel like an executive order, maybe, where he just says, you know, if you price gouge with drugs, we're gonna fucking butt fuck you back to the Stone Age. Like, we're gonna shut your goddamn company down.
I'm looking up. I'm looking up one right now that I remember in particular. Yeah. So I have a bunch of stocks, right? I've had a decent portfolio for years, and I follow it. I used to heavily invest into some of these drug, these big pharmas. Mm-hmm. One of them was Gilead. So I had this company Gilead for years, right? And they were just torching it. Now Gilead, for example, was doing trials for Hep C. Mm-hmm. They were doing trials Hep C overseas.
Are they the one where the CEO went to jail?
I'm not sure, but I know this about it, right? As the trials were going along, right, you have to pass like three phases, and it's over the course of like 6 years or something like that, which that still mystifies me, where it's just like you have to wait all this period of time for these drugs. So the stock would keep inching up as these test trials would go better and better and better. And then finally they had a cure for Hep C. And I was like, oh man, this is going to go through the roof, right? Yeah. It had already seen close to 100% increase, and I was fine with it. And once they got on TV and they're like, oh, we have the cure for Hep C and this is going to be great. They were like, but if you have the stock, you should definitely sell this now, you know, coming up. And I was like, oh, why? Once it's out there into the world, then somebody can just rip it and make a generic version of it and then sell it at a cheaper price. Because they were selling these for like $15,000 a pop to cure Hep C overseas.
Yep. Yep.
And then once it got ripped, and you know, and now it's $5 or whatever, and you can cure Hep C, and you have to get rid of the stock. So I mean, that's kind of what it is. And looking at the numbers now, I was just looking at the stock on my phone. It's down to 74. At its highest point, it was in the 120, 130 range, and it's like, dude, you're right. It does not benefit the drug companies or anyone else to find a cure immediately, because one, the companies go down, and then two, you can't kill off certain segments of the culture that you would like, in particular with AIDS, obviously.
Yeah,
like,
I'll tell you what, Connecticut, if you see in the state of Connecticut, they've been fighting badly. They just passed a bill. I think vaccinations in Connecticut are now mandatory.
Oh, really?
Everybody now in Connecticut have to vaccinate.
Yeah.
Because before they used to use like a religious waiver.
Yeah, exemptions.
And now they just passed a bill. And actually, it's the Democrats who wants that.
It should be everybody, because I have kids, and it's just like, dude, in California, when I was living in L.A., you know, for 18 years, that was the big thing of like, oh, don't vaccinate your kids.
Yeah.
You can get autism or things like that. Jenny McCarthy was leading that charge.
It was one professor in London that theorized that, and then, like, within the first 2 years of his paper being published, it got torn to pieces by the actual medical community.
Yeah.
And but Jenny McCarthy just saw it on the internet years after it had already been destroyed and turned this into a whole fucking movement.
So you had a bunch of these kids who were not getting vaccinated in California, and they were coming down with like diseases from like the 1920s, like, you know,
like measles and shit.
Measles and mumps.
Polio.
And, and you're just
like ridiculous.
Hey, man, what the fuck? And then sending these kids to school with other kids. That probably should be mandatory at this point.
Speaking of polio, Jonas Salk.
Yeah.
Right?
Big fan.
The guy that cured it.
Cured it, yeah.
You know how much? He got paid like, I think, $7,000.
For curing polio?
It was his lab fees. That's all. He billed the government for his lab fees, and that's it. And gave them the U.S. government owns the patent to the polio vaccine.
And is it $7,000?
$7,000. Like, his family should have made, if he had gone through a normal process,
billions.
$5 billion.
Yeah.
That's how much his family would have made.
My God. Needed a lawyer.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
he man. Didn't. He did
or
it.
He needed FDR to fucking live.
He knew it. He knew. Like, he did that on purpose. He's like, I'm not going to charge people for a cure for something that's killing people. Like, I'm not going to do that.
That's cool. Yeah, it's funny. Elon Musk did that with his patents for
the batteries. Yeah.
Yeah. And he said, look, everybody can take them. I don't give a shit.
He wants more people to make the car. So
the
government will fund his project. It's about $22 billion over 10 years. And basically what it does is there's a honeycomb style pattern across the entire United States where there's charging stations every 150 miles, basically.
Mm.
So you're never out of reach of a charging station.
It'd be great. I mean, look, you could also just do it at gas stations. That would be pretty cheap.
You could, but they're all privately owned, and that would be million contracts. Like, even if you go to like a Shell gas station, it's most of those are privately owned franchises now.
Yeah.
So they just pay a fee, a licensing fee. You would have to go through each, like, fuck that.
Yeah. I remember Josh has a Tesla, and we drove to Raleigh, and we had to stop at a mall.
Yeah.
And just plug it in for like, and then go have lunch for like an hour and a half. And then, you know, that was it. That was going to be our way home.
I mean, it's weird.
Yeah, it's really weird. Before we get to your info, though, I want to, since you're here, I want to ask you some questions about our U.S. politics that are going on.
Yeah, absolutely.
In particular with the media, like we were talking about earlier. So the report came out this week about Bernie Sanders that Russia was trying to help him win the Democratic nomination to go up against Trump for president because they think Trump can easily beat Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders has known for a month and finally decided to come public with this information. And then today they dropped an interview with his wife that she did on Russian TV about 4 years ago, talking about why she would have, her husband would have been the better candidate and all this other stuff. Over in the Middle East, are they rooting for Trump? Are they rooting for someone else to get in office? Like, would they be rooting for Bernie Sanders? Do you know that as far as people on the ground?
No, actually, the majority of people in the Middle East, based on the protest and everything that you, it's been proven, majority of people in the Middle East actually voting for Trump. The anti-Americans are not rooting for Trump, but they actually would love to see Trump go away.
Yeah, the anti-Americans.
Absolutely.
That makes sense. Because like a Bernie Sanders in there who wants open borders and all that other shit, like, great, we can bring death to America a lot faster.
I'll tell you this, and it's on my own responsibility. Terrorists do love this kind of politics in the U.S. They love the fact that if a U.S. president has cost them a lot of trouble, putting a lot of pressure on them, there is a hope that 4 years later this person can go away. And it can change the whole entire game. Perhaps the whole entire politics in the Middle East changes as our presidents change here in the U.S.
So do they watch it as closely as we do over here?
Much more than we do.
Yeah, they're
You're
just,
kidding.
Yes.
They're just sitting over there laughing.
Much more than we do.
So like last night's debate, it was a fucking shit show.
I can tell you right now.
People were watching
The them? Ayatollah probably now have his little subhab, the thing that he calls in his hand.
Mm-hmm.
He's probably going to watch that election and hope and pray that Trump goes away. And I'm telling you that guaranteed. This isn't my own responsibility.
Sure.
Yeah, but
The Iranian people wants to see Trump go away? Does the Iranian government, wants to see Trump go away? Yes or no?
Yeah. It's
hell
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a hard yes.
They want him to go away.
I wonder, though. It's probably not that big a deal because you've said it before on the show, but in America, we think in terms of years, months and years, and over there they think in terms of decades and centuries in some point. When it comes to foreign policy,
they're long. I'll give it to them. The Middle East's long game is strong, dude.
I mean, their long game right now is just to get into the U.S. and fuck and have babies. You know what I mean? And that's one of the things they want to do, obviously, which makes sense. But it's another one of those reasons why I think that that not term limits, but what do you call it? Or I guess term limits in this case. I think term limits are stupid. For like, in what other situation would you fire your CEO after 4 or 8 years, regardless of their performance? Who would do that?
Yeah.
How does that make sense?
Well,
like, I get the idea of, we didn't like kings. We want to prevent tyranny. But even the founders, like George Washington, had an 8-year run because he decided to. And every president after him had 4 or 8 years because they decided to until FDR.
Yeah.
Like, it wasn't like... And FDR was, by all accounts, a good president. Like, you can criticize him for some stuff that was maybe myopic and shit like that, but we still have an election every 4 years.
Yeah.
Just keep having the election and let the guy... Why would you fucking set a limit on that?
Yeah.
It doesn't make any fucking sense to me.
No, I don't know. And you know, shit... I guess age, but even then it's not really a factor. Everybody's running from the Democratic side is virtually 79 years old.
Yeah, but you still have to win the goddamn election. Like,
I know.
You can't.
I have to say, you know, I love the diversity right now that's among the Democratic Party. Because when you look at them,
all the old
whites.
All the rich old white people they hate.
Someone actually put that on like that. Yeah. I was like, really? Like,
yep.
That's actually true.
You have to think about it from like,
yeah,
your family's, your people's perspective back in the Middle East.
Yeah.
They're watching all these old white people that are rich as fuck, like, talk shit about old rich white people.
Yeah,
like how do?
That's the thing.
I can't think of a another example of
you
that.
Because you have two billionaires currently in it, Tom Steyer and Michael Bloomberg.
Yeah.
And they're trying to go up against the billionaire that they hate, who is already in office. And it's like...
Michael Bloomberg is already like pissing me off right now. Because every time I want to watch a YouTube video or something, his ads comes in my face.
I hate to interrupt you. This podcast is sponsored by Michael Bloomberg. I'm kidding. He's
I'm out of here.
He's going to give us $2,500 on everyone. It was Michael McKean, the comedian, was just like, hey, man. I was at my best friend's sonogram yesterday, and on the sonogram that said... Sponsored by Michael Bloomberg. Yeah. It's just like, motherfuckers everywhere.
I'm glad you guys have brought this up. As a Middle Eastern born Muslim, I have a lot of people in my community that argues with me. Like, how come you're like, you know, you're conservative and you're voting for the racist? And and they have this conversation with me. And I just turn around and I say one thing. And I said, what is your parties about? Diversity.
Yeah.
I said, show me the diversity. Where do they let you... be somebody. Like, where would they let you be somebody? I'm like Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders.
Well, she's Bloomberg. She's won 1,024th Cherokee.
Yeah, so. she's a full Indian.
I mean, that's essentially like walking up to the ocean with an eyedropper. Like,
that's one.
It's like me claiming that I'm white. You know?
Yeah, exactly.
Well, you are. You're white, a fucking dude. You're
giving a whale a Tic Tac. At this point.
Hell no.
So before we get into all the good stuff you got here, we got some sponsors who pay for this whole shit wagon to be on the air. First and foremost, talking about GhostBed.com/DrinkingBros. Earth thing is 25% off. Are we in a wide, Jamie?
This camera went hot, so I'm fixing it.
No, are we in a wide? Yes or no?
Yeah.
Okay. GhostBed.com/DrinkingBros. 25% off of everything. Got a little tech difficulties in here. Got a bunch of ladies running around in the background. Kidding. It's not them. It's not them, but you always blame the women in situations like this.
I think it's the temperature of the room, so you could probably blame that on women. Yeah, we're always trying to turn it down, and they're always trying to turn it up.
Or there's an Iraqi in the room that, of course.
Well, yeah, exactly.
You can't be trusted. Yeah. I know that. Look at all that squiggly writing over here.
And we keep it at 69 in this office, as always.
For obvious reasons.
Go to ghostbed.com. Look, 25% off is the most I have to say at this point. That is fucking incredible. It's still good with the pay-as-you-go program. No interest, 36 months. GhostBed.com is bringing you the motherfucking business, dude. That's the best deal you can get, dude. And look, again, it's no joke. You put in the 36-month interest-free shit, and boom, you get 25% off of everything. It's like $20 a month on all your favorite stuff. Next up, we got KillCliffCBD.com. Ooh, how I love thee. Bunch of people hit us up yesterday on Drinking Bros Sports, D'Anthony, and they were like, yo, man, what was that promo code again? It is Drinking Bros, kids. It is always Drinking Bros. Go to KillCliffCBD.com and type in the promo code Drinking Bros, 20% off everything and free shipping. Favorite flavors, grape. That's my jam. It's my business. They got the orange kush, and they got the old mango. Everybody's leaning towards the mango these days.
It's getting popular. There's a mango White Claw out now too that everybody's really.
And so
really
I went into the store and they had just, you can solely buy a 12 pack now of just mango.
You know what I just heard from some people? Actually, let me check and make sure I can say this out loud before I start talking.
Yeah.
Hang on.
But go to KillCliffCBD.com today and get on it, man. Look, with that 20% off and free shipping with promo code Drinking Bros, knocks it down to about $3.80 a can, which is dirt cheap. I mean, you can buy a can of Monster, you can get 25 milligrams of CBD right in your mouth hole, and you will not test for it. 80% of our audience is military and first responder. You will not piss hot for this. So just want to kind of give you the heads up on that. And you're good to go. Last but not least, talking about boxofawesome.com. Man, this is one of my faves because I don't know what I'm getting every month. It's just a box full of magic that shows up at your house. If you're a dude or a lady, they got them for ladies now too, right? D'Anthony, at Box of Awesome?
Yeah, it's the same. I think it's Bespoke. Well, no, it's on boxofawesome.com.
So. Yeah. But it's all made by Bespoke. It's the nicest shit on the planet. Yeah. It's like Bespoke walking posts, into... what's that store in the mall, dude, where you get all the dopest shit?
Shit, I know what you're talking about.
Brookstone.
Brookstone, yeah.
It's like rolling in a Brookstone.
It's got all that weird technology.
Yeah, it's the best, dude. You go on, you write in five questions, answer five questions about yourself. They'll tell you what kind of man or lady you are, and then they'll send you shit accordingly, and it's all the nicest shit on the planet. Again, I get a hatchet, dude. I get a sweet-ass hatchet.
A hatchet comes in handy when some Iraqi dude sneaks in to your studio.
Or if you're
with all that squiggly rotten, hell no.
Elizabeth Warren, dude.
Yeah.
She's got one.
Yeah.
She's probably got two strapped to the back of her calf. It helps her debate better, I think.
Well, she needs two or three more, if that's the case.
She'll be out, let's face it, after Super Tuesday.
She's gone. I just don't think that anybody wants to hear her talk.
You know, there's like other moms that do.
I think people want to hear the information. Yeah. I just don't think they want to hear it from her.
Probably not. But go to boxofawesome.com today. Promo code DRINKINBROS, 20% off. That's like $45, and it is the nicest shit that gets sent to your house. Again, I got a dop kit one time. I get a travel bag. I got a hatchet. I got a whiskey decanter. And they're always mixing it up. We get some Jesse, my wife, got some cooking knives. Just the finest quality products there is at boxofawesome.com. Promo code DRINKINBROS, 20% off your first box. Hamidi, what do you got for us today here? Because you always come with the business here.
So this is in detail of what's been going on right now. Iran is basically how Buddha planned to encounter all the problems they've been having, which is the most difficult things, as I mentioned before, is that the Revolutionary Guard did not know how they can control this new generation that's open to social media, open to the internet. It's more connecting with America naturally than any other time.
Now, do they have access of the internet over there the same way that we do? Is it?
Yes, of
course. Or are the sites limited?
I think, you know, it's not the same as we do, but it's limited. They do. They have Facebook.
Okay.
They have YouTube. They can search, you know, anything on Google.
Oh, wow.
So they can follow now some of our, you know, shows, our Hollywood actors and all this that's been going on. So the world has been open over there. And something about the Iranian regime that you might not know. The Iranian regime has a policy on their constitution. It's called they want to export the revolution to the rest of the Middle East. Their dream is to control the Middle East from the river to the sea. That's how they want to do it.
Okay.
So this is actually part of it. But now they're facing all these issues with people going out against them. They realize is they need to invest more in the psychological operation aspect and how they can control the mindset of this young Iraqi that's being born now. If this young Iraqi or young Yemeni or young Lebanese or Syrian, it's born now being all about America, this is not going to serve their interest. So they need to make sure that the next child is born is going to automatically hate America. So what they're doing is right now they're updating their budget. They actually have brought hundreds of Iraqi media reporters to Iran to train them.
Really?
And that was actually just days before Soleimani was killed. There's actually a picture here you can drop of the meeting with Abu Mehdi al-Mohandes, the general that dealt with Iran.
Yeah, put that up, Jamie.
Yep. Okay. There's a picture in a meeting in an operation room. And you'll see Abu Mehdi al-Mohandes, the general that dealt with Soleimani, is sitting. And there are people sitting around him. These are the top reporters in Iraq. These are not just any random reporters. These are the top ones. It's just like you come to America and you take the top
like
reporters.
Dan Rather.
Exactly.
Before,
yep.
Yeah, before he lost his mind. Yeah.
Before he lied yep. about
like Megyn Kelly.
Yep. And no. they
Hannity.
Hannity, yes. Yeah.
So Megyn they took Kelly. Him there. And what they're doing is they paying them salaries between $600 to about $2,000 American dollars.
Okay, per story?
Per person, a month.
Okay. Mm.
And what they're doing for them is, right now, so far, they have 17 channels in Iraq that works for Iran, that operates all with the same agenda that Iran wants. They decided to update that from 17 to about 22.
Okay.
They have 3 podcasts. 5 newspapers. They do have 3 podcasts.
You're kidding me.
They 3 podcasts. They have 5 newspapers, 2 magazines, and they have 6 research centers. All their job is to do is to research the ideas, research the content, and put it out there so they can control the nation psychologically. So that way you don't think America is a good country anymore.
Yeah.
Because we're all going to report the same thing about America. And they have about 128 Facebook page. That's
really
away from the Facebook pages that's owned by the channel.
Okay.
These are just 128 random Facebook pages that they put out there. And all its job right now to basically enhance the picture of the Iranian regime in the Middle East, to make more animosity towards the United States. We are basically in a war right now, media-wise, with Iran. And they were doing this for the last decade.
Yeah.
However, they just realized that they were not doing enough. So now they're updating this. They're spending actually another $5 million to update this.
I think with everything that happened in the 2016 election, right?
Yeah.
With America and Russia, and they're saying, oh, Russia again rigged the elections, which, yeah. Dan, you know the exact number. What did they spend on Facebook ads?
About $100,000.
$100,000.
I think it was $130,000.
And again, if you believe what you read on Facebook,
yeah.
You're a fucking idiot who deserves to be duped anyways, right?
Yeah.
But with that, I think it opened the door and the possibility for all these other governments like Iran and Iraq to say, hey, man, we can control our own narrative psychologically. We don't have to put people, we don't have to put soldiers outside of people's doors anymore. We can, the psychological warfare warfare is almost stronger than
the actual physical war.
Yes.
I agree on that 100%.
Because now you're getting kids who are growing up on the internet, who are either or watching TV or their tablets or whatever, reading the same news, talking about the same subjects, and everybody's believing in the same essentially belief that's being fed to them by the government. That to me is more dangerous than, hey, you need to join the war or, you know, put a soldier outside somebody's house.
So,
because you can, like, behind closed doors, you can still say whatever you want, even if a soldier was outside your door, obviously, you know?
Absolutely.
But now with this, it's like, hey, man, now we can control it every single day, all day long. Everything they read, hear, listen to, or talk about is going to be their own controlled narrative and their own hatred for the United States.
Yeah, indeed. And I'll tell you, the way they're doing it is so fascinating. Like, when I was getting this information, I was so shocked with how they're doing things. This is not just to actually do things that are anti-America, because Iran is trying to shut any voice right now that speaks against it. So this actually is to shut down Sunnis who might speak against Iran and Iraq, because Iran is, you know, a Shia.
Mm-hmm.
It's to shut down Sunnis and also to shut down Shia that are also going to speak against Iran. So some of these reporters is job to brainwash, and some of them is job to face the other line, to face like a good media reporter. How can we face this person? How can we really make this person look stupid and make him look? So they figured so many different styles of doing that. So they, what Iran did right now, it basically established an army, media army. And the person that's actually assigned on this right now, his name is Agha Shahini. He is the media advisor in the Iranian embassy in Baghdad. This is the first time someone put in this guy's name out there.
Right.
He does not exist. He hides under the table. Nobody sees who he is. But his name is Shahini. He is the Iranian media advisor in the Iranian embassy in Baghdad, Iraq.
Okay.
And the other person that's helping him, because, you know, this is an Iranian. This is a guy who doesn't speak Arabic probably and needs someone a little bit more involved in this, who is more in the media, in the Arabic media. And the next guy that's helping him, his name is Qasem Kassir, which we have his picture. We'll drop it in here.
Okay. Yeah, Jamie, post that.
Yep.
Okay.
Qasem Kassir is basically Hezbollah. He's a Lebanese media reporter who worked for like various media stations before, TV stations. And he is basically the one that right now orchestrating, putting all this, setting all this cells within the media and to have a control and a grip over the media in the Middle East, because their job is to control the whole Middle East mindset. This is not just Iraq. This is the Middle East, specifically the Arab world. And to also speak against, to promote anti-Semitism, speak against Israel, against the Saudis, who are basically, they have animosity with them. They're enemies against the Saudis, against the other Arab countries that are standing up to Iran. And the crazy part here is that they are using Facebook part of this. That's why they're putting more money.
Does Zuckerberg know this?
Okay, so this is not saying that Facebook is intentionally helping Iran. Facebook is actually doing a great job to trying to shut down all these pages, all these pages that are being created by Iran. I'm sorry. And what they're doing is Facebook has been shutting down a lot of pages.
Mm-hmm.
However, they figured a new technique, you know, which is called what we called it earlier is a deep fake.
Deep fake, yeah.
Deep fake. So the deep fake works here when we're doing it in English, when someone is faking a Trump speech and using the same lip techniques to that they said something they didn't say.
So to clarify for the audience, are people in Iraq and Iran watching videos of President Trump that are fake by somebody?
Possible.
Doing his voice.
Yeah,
and saying,
absolutely possible.
We need to keep firing away at Iran.
Oh, absolutely, because that's
like
what
that.
Iran does. Is always try to make you look bad as an American.
Right.
They always try to make you look like the enemy. So what they doing?
I want to see an Iranian dude doing a Trump accent. That's what I want to see.
It'd be gold. Because I will say this: the reason I bring this up, I saw the Putin one the other day, and it was real hard to distinguish if it was real or fake.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I knew it because of the article title, and they were like, "Hey, give this a watch. This is how close we're getting."
So if you look into Facebook, deepfake is basically it works when you do it in English. However, Facebook do have employees who are supposed to do that for them when people speak Arabic or other languages. However, in the Middle East, we don't speak like Americans in English language, speaking like all the same kind of language that's kind of similar.
Idioms don't translate well. If you were to say, I don't have a dog in that fight or something like that, that doesn't mean shit to an Iraqi person. So.
And the other part is that we have different dialects. Dialects, which means it's almost a different language. So if let's say if someone in Facebook is vetting this some other video, which it could be of an Iraqi politician that's trying to speak against Iran, or maybe they're faking something about some guy saying something about, you know, they want to make someone look bad or more of like defaming somebody.
Mm-hmm.
It works if the employee is from that country and knows that dialect, it works. If that person that Facebook has that's supposed to vet that video or supposed to recognize it is not from that country, just because if a Moroccan speaks, they can never understand me and I can never understand them. That's how it is. It's not like English where you can talk to an Australian and you can you talk to a Brit. It doesn't work this way.
Right.
So what they're doing is they learned that Facebook have a hard time distinguishing that, and they've been using this technique to actually go after their enemies. In the media-wise, putting words that you didn't say out there to make you look bad. And even though Facebook has been doing a good job, every once in a while they're doing a campaign. They've been deleting a lot of pages. But as many pages that get deleted, as more as they make. Perhaps they're establishing 128 pages that most likely will do paid ads. But if the Iraqi channels pay those ads, it doesn't look anything. It's not against Facebook freedom of speech. It's not violence. It's not sexual. It's morally just news.
Yeah.
So the point of it is you might think it's just news. If you sit of it as Ross Peterson working for Facebook and you look at it, you'd be like, there's nothing wrong with this.
Yeah.
But the whole point of it, of that that ad or that video is to get people actually to slowly build them towards hating America, hating the Middle East, showing them that what America is going to do to them. So you're talking about a new generation of Iraq that's going to come out, or new generation of Syria and Yemen and other countries are going to come out already automatically hating America.
So let me ask you this. No one at Facebook or the people that work at Facebook are Middle Eastern?
They do. They do. That's what I'm saying is they do have Middle Eastern, but they might not have the right Middle Easterns. If you bring a Moroccan to try to figure something out that someone is in Iraqi speaking, I can give you 100% guarantee that person would never be able to figure that out. You have to bring someone who actually speak that dialect and understand it correctly and can know the words and know the personalities in order to know if that's a deepfake or if that's a real conversation. So that is something. Even though, like, I'm not saying Facebook doesn't know about this. It's unintentional, but they need to work harder.
Facebook isn't an intelligence organization, so they don't have a staff of translators for every single goddamn Arabic dialect.
Exactly,
there's no way they would.
Yeah.
I mean, Why would they?
This just keeps getting worse and worse, doesn't it?
It's not going to stop. It just is what it is.
I know.
I mean, they're using the same thing we're using here for like our own elections or whatever, but they're using it for long term because they don't have election. You know what I mean? Like they control everything. Down there, they're using it for the long term. For the next 10 years, we need to fix this. We need to make sure the next generation is absolutely right. The way we want them to think. And perhaps the information I got, they said it's the most difficult job for the Iranian Revolutionary Guard right now is to do this job.
I'm sure. Because this is the easiest, cheapest way to pass out information. You don't have to go. It's costly to send people out in the streets.
Yeah.
It's costly to fucking line people up and do all that other shit.
It's more than just, it's costly in ways other than financial as well.
Yeah.
Like there's political, like your economy suffers because of trade deals getting shut down and shit. But if you can just do shit in secret, I mean, this is what the U.S. has been doing for years. We used to, during the Cold War, one of my college professors, he was an Air Force intelligence guy, retired, obviously, told me that during the Cold War, they would fucking, they dropped these leaflets over parts of the former Soviet Union.
They used to do it in World War II as well, right?
Yeah, but it was like crazy stuff. They would drop leaflets that talked about Americans having bigger dicks and they put like a Magnum condom on it and drop them out of the just like it was a test to see if they cared about that, like if the women would start turning on their dudes and coming over to the U.S. side,
really,
because of bigger dicks. Like that's just one example. Wow. He told me a million of them. Like this is all this weird shit that we did back then in the Cold War.
Yeah,
but the U.S. has been doing this shit for years.
Oof.
It's not like I don't.
The difference is this though. We didn't have like 10 years ago. We didn't have social media. We didn't have YouTube was what just turned 15 years old. We didn't have YouTube. We didn't have in our generation, right? We do now, but for my kids and. Watching them come up, like all they use is YouTube, you know, TikTok, weird shit like that. And it's like, once you're able to control that, it's game over.
Well, I mean, look,
because trying to stop it as a parent,
I think the next generation after our kids, there's going to be some kind of rebellion against technology. I think because that's how it works. Like humanity is very cyclical when it comes to stuff like that. So.
You're right, by the way. I just had this conversation with Jesse.
I think it's
there's
happen.
A group of kids right now who, what was it called in the Ross Patterson Revolution? Normcore is what it's called. They're rebelling against these teenagers in America are rebelling against dressing up slutty or trying to look attractive. They're wearing mom jeans, those white thick sneakers like your aunt's wear. I mean, they look, and it's cute girls where you're just like, dude, you look horrific. They're not wearing makeup. They're not doing, it's like Billie Eilish wearing baggy clothes and shit like that. They're covering up and they're like, oh, we're fighting back against society. And it's like,
it's weird how that works. I mean, like with the more successful you become. We lived outside, had to hunt, fish, gather, etc., right? Fight off our enemies all the time. And now we live indoors and we do all those things for recreation.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So now we've the things that we I guess if you want to take it that direction, Fight Club, what does he say in that? And would Chuck Palahniuk write the things we own end up owning us?
Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah. Social media is definitely becoming like that. Like it's becoming. Yeah. It's a virus. It's too powerful. And everybody has access to it. It's like just having a fucking, it's like an open air office. Right. And there's a fucking red button. But there's not even a line. You can just walk up and press it anytime you want.
Yeah.
Not that there's not even security. There's not even a goddamn line. You can walk over there and do whatever the fuck you want. You can press that button all day. And I feel like it's iRobot, Isaac Asimov. Like, what's the right question to be asking right here? Where is this all going? Like, what's the next threat that's going to, because, I mean, we think about the normal shit, like our energy infrastructure, power grid and all that stuff,
right?
And banking and fucking jails that are, I mean, like all these institutions that are controlled by computer systems, right? That have become a lot less secure because of social media and a lot more accessible because of it. And but we think about those kind of things. Those are obvious if you're a risk assessment person, but how do you imagine something that doesn't exist? You know what I mean?
That's I mean, imagine how ISIS used Twitter as one of their main communication.
They still are.
They still are.
Yeah, yeah. Still are.
And how, you know, the thing is they jump on the same platform that we're on, which is, you know, it's an opportunity for them. They're going to take it. However, you know, Al-Qaeda have used social media, but I think the way Iran is using it, it's completely different. Because these other terrorist organizations are using it for communication, for talking about their battles that they won, or the ground they've been controlling. But when it comes to Iran, Iran is shooting for the next 10 years.
Right.
And that's the difference, is that you're facing a country that is fighting against every American interest, period. And, you know, a lot of people here would say, you know, if we have left those countries alone, they would leave us alone. That's not true. That's right. BS. Try it out. Leave them alone, see what they will do.
I mean, we left Afghanistan alone for about 20 years after we kicked the Russians out of there.
Exactly. And that's why I'm like, if you leave them alone, it doesn't mean they're going to stop hating you. It doesn't mean they're going to stop trying to run after your interest.
Yeah.
They're going to do the same thing anyway. So I'd rather be in front of them than be far away from them. And they're shooting for the next 10 years. Because right now they knew that the social media have worked against them. And they're trying to figure out a way to use the social media in their own benefits.
Yep.
So they can control, and it's dangerous. Look, if a child is born in Iraq right now, going to be getting educated for the next 15 years about how evil America is, what do you think that child is going to do when he's 17?
Oh, yeah.
He's going to fight us.
Yeah, he's going to come over here and try to bomb us.
He's not even over here. He's going to fight our troops over there.
Right.
He's going to do something. So I think we are in a media war right now with Iran. We are much more involved media-wise in a war with Iran than it is a physical war. However, our media is not prepared for something like that. We don't encounter that kind of ideology or that kind of agenda.
Mm-hmm.
Our media is pretty much kind of almost works against us as a nation.
It feels like it today. Yeah.
It is. I mean, it is working against us. It's not. You know what I mean? Because if you sympathize with the enemy, I think that's very un-American in my opinion. Like, for me,
that's how I feel as well.
Yeah, it's very un-American. Because for me, it's like, hey, if you think that, you know, we should have never done this or that, you're ignorant. That's what many people thinking. Like, we shouldn't have touched Soleimani. Well, what about the 600 Americans that he killed?
Yeah.
Do we just walk away from that? Do we just say it? We'll forget it. You know, it's just more misinformed. And the media, of course, is not giving you the true message of what's going on, which is the reason why I don't go online and here's my information. It's all in papers.
And the interesting part about the Soleimani thing, looking back on it now, right?
Yeah.
For years and years and years, you know, Bush administration and Obama administration, we could have took him out. Everybody was afraid of what would happen, that it would lead to a third world war.
Yep.
How did we drastically underestimate how powerful Iran was? Because let's face it, not only has nothing happened at this point, they don't want anything to happen. And now we know how weak their military is.
Mm-hmm.
Why didn't we do this years ago? Was it out of fear of like everybody saying, oh no, they've got this amazing military? And
no, because they were winning psychologically.
That's it, right?
That's all of it. They were winning psychologically. Because if you remember when they detained the Navy sailors, mm-hmm. remember that? When they detained them and they took them to, you know, Iran, mm-hmm. they did that to the Brits. Why were they doing that back then? Why are they not doing it now?
Because now that they got popped, it seems like...
But even before they got popped,
they
knew the reactions would be different.
Yeah.
It's that when they did something, they knew the reaction of that government, whether if it was a Republican or Democrat. They knew and they analyzed and they behaved based on that. Perhaps, in my opinion, that if you don't use the right psychology with Iran, they will be all over you.
Yeah,
it's because Iran's is not, they're not stupid. The government of Iran, I'm saying it clear, they're not stupid people. Yeah. They're extremely smart.
People want our president, whomever it is, to be respectful and nice and shit like that. And that is not how it goes over there. That, like, if I'm in Iraq and I'm interrogating somebody, I'm going to slap the shit out of them in the face. With my open hand, I'm just going to slap them because that's how they respond to that. They respond to handguns, not rifles. They're not afraid of rifles. But if you pull out a handgun, not that I'm saying you should interrogate somebody with a handgun. I'm just saying, like, there's certain...
Why is that, by the way?
Because that was Saddam's choice of execution method
for
the most part. Line people up, shoot them in the back of the head. That's what I've heard anyways. Yeah. But people want the president... Like, one of the things that a lot of people said when Obama got elected is, like, he immediately brought dignity back to the fucking White House. Like, okay, great, man. That's great. But the president's job, part of it is to be, to represent the country, I suppose, in a good way. But as the commander-in-chief, his job is to win wars or prevent wars from happening. And one way to do that is to straight up tell Iran, we're going to fuck you up if you keep fucking around.
Yeah.
Like, there's nothing wrong with saying that. That's part of the psychological battle between our countries. So I remember this bit Dennis Miller did back in the day, and it was when kind of when he was going through his process of changing from a super liberal to being more conservative. Mm-hmm. And this is when Bush had was going, I think, in the reelection phase of 2003, 2004. excuse me. He was like, everybody always huffs and guffaws about nuclear. We're like, under what circumstances should we ever use nuclear weapons? He's like, I don't know, if we run out of the normal ones. Like, why are we like, why do we have all this shit? Not that we should be eager to use nukes, but if somebody's over there talking about attacking our country and we have, like, we honestly, it's like, it's like that Louis C.K. thing where the girl was on the phone.
Yeah, yeah, and he was masturbating.
It's why didn't you hang up the fucking phone? Yeah. Like, we have the ability to hang up the phone on anybody we want forever. So why are we suffering, these idiots? No, just get fucked.
Yeah.
Like, we don't have to necessarily nuke anybody, but we have other weapons now. We have a rail gun that shoots like a 65-foot piece of metal that is about like a 2 kiloton yield. It's like a small nuke. Like, a normal yield is like 10 kiloton to 25, something like that. But we could just drop one of those on an uninhabited area in Iran. Just like, and people would see the goddamn mushroom cloud.
Yeah.
And be like, hey, next one's going to hit a city. It's that goddamn simple, dude.
I know it. I get it. Yeah.
Also, like, I mean, that's not saying that we're going to go be disrespectful for every country. We could be respectful to a lot of countries who are very respectful to us. But when it comes to an enemy who is using dirty psychology against you, you have to have a different language. And I believe that whether if it was Obama, Bush, or Trump, we needed to send a message to Iran saying, like, look, we are capable of stopping you.
Yeah.
We're not going to use this psychology with you. We're not going to let you get all over us or intimidate us. And Iran needed that kind of air pull a little bit. They needed their airs to be pulled a little bit because they were getting, during, you know, the years that Obama was in office, that, God bless them, they got so aggressive. They were all over our Navy. They were driving their little boats very close to our Navy vessels, trying to threat us, using all kind of threats in the radio, all kind of intimidation techniques. What happened when Trump came to office before Soleimani was airstriked? Did they ever practice any of these moves? No. Because they realize it's a different person in front of them, and they realize it's a different party, and they don't want to go to war. But before, they knew that they can harass the U.S. because the U.S. government back then had a policy of not going to war at all unless America gets attacked. Right. So they were doing everything they can because they understand your policy. So now they see a different person. Their behavior have changed. They're more careful. They're more conserved now. And mark my word, if Trump comes out in office and someone else come in, watch Iran behaves.
Yeah.
Watch the whole Middle East changes into, because how did the Middle East change? It's based on every U.S. president that came along. What happened to us in Iraq when ISIS in 2014 and 15 took over Mosul and destroyed Iraq, pretty much took 30% of Iraq? Why did that happen? Who did we have in office? We had Obama. A lot of people are like, oh, you can't blame that on Obama because Bush is the one did this because he entered Iraq. No, no, this has nothing to do with it. What happened to us in Iraq? Because we pulled the troops out of Iraq. Look what happened to Iraq. Change. So the Middle East life really depends on this election every 4 years in America. This is where the Middle East really has to watch. I don't think the Iraqis or the Iranians or the Syrians or the Yemenis or the Lebanese should watch their own election. They should be watching more of their American election.
Yeah.
This is what's going to determine their future.
Yeah.
Literally.
Nah, I agree. Last question before I let you get out of here today.
Yeah.
A lot of people ask every time you're on the show, they're like, why does he do it? Why does he come on and name names and out people? and essentially put yourself in harm's way by this. Because like you said, you know, people yeah. are listening over there. They know that Drinking Bros is now officially a spy for Iran or spying on Iran. I've had the same answer to them. I'm like, look, I don't think you understand how much Hamidi loves America and loves his own country of Iraq, that you're doing it because you want to be a help, right?
Yeah. I'm doing this. I've been unharmed since 2003, you know, in front of this enemy. I've been fighting this enemy before any one of you knew anything about it.
Right.
And before, I was more of a soldier, a secret soldier for the government or the intelligence community. That's what I was, which people didn't know who I was. I feel like I'm much more effective if I am that secret soldier for the American people. Because if the American people are educated about this, if they understand it, then there's no room for the mainstream media. There's no room for anybody to control their brain. Because what do they say all the time about people who are like you and Daniel? They're misinformed. They don't know. That's why they think the way they think, because they don't know. And the truth is that there's so many powers, which is media and everything, are trying to shift your thinking. So for me, I think I found much more pride, even though the information I provided back in the day saved American lives. That's different. But the information I brought today is important. I feel it's important because if the American people are informed, I'm going to win my war. If the American people are not informed in this situation, then I'm losing this battle. So I find more pride of actually informing the American people and opening that wall that's in front of their face to the Middle East, to what the really truth is, because there's no way of getting the truth.
Yeah.
And you know, you noticed that the information I provided in the last podcast was actually something just got released 48 hours ago. And that's what is it for me. You know, for me, I didn't care what the formation did. And perhaps I shared a document with Daniel a couple nights ago. It's a declassified document. And we were joking about it. I said, one day I'll tweet this to President Bush. to me, I really didn't care what I provided in the past, how impactful it was on the U.S. government. I think it's important that, for me, this is my passion. I loved collecting info on that enemy. And the enemy, of course, hated it. You know, when you read my book or my film, they hated it. They hated every bit of it, because what I was doing is I was bringing you a picture that you couldn't see. I was providing you with a view that you couldn't see it. And I loved it. I enjoyed it. I felt that was like my orgasm in Iraq, is taking the Americans from being uninformed, not know what's going on, to put them right in the real situation. And this time I see myself taking the American people, not the government, not the intelligence community, and put them in that seat so they can see really what goes on. And they don't have to be misinformed, because they shouldn't be. The American people are smart people, and they shouldn't be blocked from that world.
Man, you're a fascinating dude, and we always enjoy having you on. This is the point in the show we get to the drinking bro of the week. I'm actually going to give this to you, D'Anthony. You threw me a surprise party last night.
I didn't have anything to do with it.
Really?
I mean, I...
He throws parties for nobody. He's like,
I was
going
to try to be nice to him. No. Like, hey, man, this is fucking awesome last night.
Tiffany DM'd me and was like, hey, who can I talk to about getting their friends from the neighborhood together? So I just hooked her up with Bayou Brook.
Oh, great, great. So then I'm going to give this to Tiffany then.
Yeah,
Tiffany. And the Drinking Bro-Lets podcast. Thanks, Tiffany. Fuck Dan.
I didn't do anything.
Piece of shit.
Yeah. I literally...
he just showed up to eat and drink. That's all he showed up
for. Yeah. I mean, the most I did was not ruin the surprise, I suppose. Yeah.
Great. Great.
Because I didn't know that it was happening.
Oh, God. You can always depend on Dan.
You made it wrong. Look too good right now.
I put people together. I make connections. That's what I do. That's honestly figuring out problems and putting people together is what I do best. So there we go.
Okay.
I did it. Minimal effort is pretty much my go-to.
Tiffany Hart, then. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. It was fun.
She's a better person than I am, obviously.
Oof, we got fucked up last night.
Yep.
Hominy, where can everybody find you on social media?
I am on Instagram, The Terrorist Whisper. And I'm The Terrorist Whisper perhaps everywhere. On Amazon, the film is The Terrorist Whisper.
Yep.
And the book is on my website, theterroristwhisper.com. That's where people can get the book.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. Yep. Thanks again for being here. We appreciate it.
My pleasure.
As always, for D'Anthony Holloway, Hominy Jacinto, I am Ross Patterson. This is the Drinking Bros. Good nights, everyone.